From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment from the cafeteria of the Saddam Children's Hospital with David Wayne, who, as I think about this, probably 20 years ago this month, the last episode of The State aired on MTV.
Oh, is that possible?
I think it is.
Oh, I feel so old.
Hey, I remembered it, so. Of course, we know him from Wet Hot American Summer as a director. One of my favorite movies. He's also gone on to direct Role Models, his newest film as director, a movie that played very well at Sundance this year, and a very smart movie, I think. They came together, which I like because it sounds like the title of a forgotten Howard Hawks Western.
Right, or a forgotten rom-com from the 90s.
But one of the things that you do in this movie, and I've come to associate with you, and maybe even The State, is you guys often would go after things with no subtext and give them subtext, and a lot of the rom-coms are just satirizing in this movie, both paying homage, but also satirizing with a lot of these things like You've Got Mail, where there's no subtext, it's just all text.
Right. I think we just take those things that we know are familiar with, their tropes or story turns that we like, or formulas, especially in this one, which really is in large part a spoof, but our way of spoofing is to just come up with our take on it or our twist or our undercutting of the normal version of doing that scene. But sometimes for us, just doing the scene exactly as we think it would be done in one of those kinds of movies is itself the joke contextually.
And we should say the movie it stars Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, who I guess they go back to Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Paul has been in every movie I've done.
That's true. I think, though, you've used him in so many different ways because he's such a weird, relentless optimist in this that he ends up like doing some kind of horrible things.
Although this one, and they came together, the character is by design just, it's a character in quotes, as you might say, or the whole movie is in quotes in a way. And so he is the compendium of the rom-com lead. And as we say in the dialogue of the movie, he's Jewish, but not too Jewish and non-threatening and, you know, as is the case in a lot of these rom-com characters, he's stupid to the point of almost being brain dead.
And this takes me back to The State. And The State happened to come along at a time where, in shows like SNL or Mad TV, where everything was about the statement of the premise. I mean, there's almost a kind of a premise overload. And you guys were working basically to get away from all that sort of thing. So to get away from the idea of doing comedy in quotes.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that we felt like we had our own voice that more organically sprouted from us working together and less was modeled after Saturday Night Live or other sketch shows that
I thought it was, if modeled anything, it was modeled to be the reverse of that.
Yeah.
Where, again, because like I was saying, all those shows, by that time, they just become the kind of thing where the characters or the actors would come out and the premise would be stated and the sketch would just kind of end. And
right.
Each piece on The State was constructed to have an ending that took you back to the statement of the beginning of the piece.
Yes, we constructed our pieces more like little movies or more like little stories. And we were very, even in those early days, we were very cognizant of trying to keep things dense and structured and not an extra word, you know. And in some ways it was a reaction to seeing sketches on SNL that went on and on and on and then just didn't end. And we said, no, we want to have discipline. And we put 13 sketches in a 22-minute episode and, you know, wanted to keep it moving, which was also the environment of the network we were on at the time, MTV. And it was before the era where networks like MTV had a variety of programming. It was mostly still music videos.
Yeah, it's the days when Donald Logue was doing those weird interstitials.
Yeah.
On the network.
And in fact, we laid over popular music from the day over the whole series, which was a mandate at the time, but gave it its own specific feel, you know, looking back.
I now know you from when you came to LACMA to do the live read.
So much fun.
Of Tootsie. And I just sort of think that is the archetypal comedy that is text and subtext.
Yeah.
And a bunch of pieces that feel like they're anecdotal, but in fact lead to an end.
Oh, yeah.
And that's clearly a shaping influence on you, that whole structure of that.
Absolutely.
Thing.
Well, I mean, it is the greatest example from a comedy perspective, you know, from my generation of a script that is constructed in that way, where every single piece has a reason and a very clever need to be there. And everything either comments on another thing or builds to the end, and everything fits together like an interlocking puzzle. And yet watching it, you're not thinking about any of that. You're just laughing. And that's the key. And I think one thing that I would like to think is a mark of all the stuff that I've done in TV and in movies is we just put in a lot of time and effort into all these tiny little things, and then hopefully with the result making it look like we're just having fun and it's all silly and goofy. And but there is a lot of effort behind the scenes.
Yeah, but I just, in seeing that, it just, for me, crystallized the way you think about comedy, that the idea of just doing comedy with no support system, with nothing underneath, mm-hmm. is just completely anathema to you.
Yes, I guess so. Although sometimes I feel like, unless that's the idea, like how much can we make this not have, especially earlier on, I think I was trying to figure out how to go against any sort of meaning or any sort of heart. But I feel like now I'm less interested in being so cynical.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are those who might say that They Came Together is kind of cynical about sentimentality.
Well, in fact, yeah, a friend of mine saw it and said, wow, you are really a nihilist. Like, nothing is okay, real, nothing is sincere. There's just not, like, and in a way, I, of course, understand, because by design, it is a spoof. And so we do undercut every single moment in this romantic story in a way. But at the same time, I feel like there's a heart there, and maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but I just think the way Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler actually relate on screen, there's a real chemistry there, and I find myself, when I'm watching it, rooting for them to make it work in the end, even though the whole thing is so damn silly.
Well, not only that, but it exists to sort of deconstruct every single cliche of that genre.
Yeah, although I hope that ultimately that's not the goal from a viewer perspective. I don't want people to think that we're doing an academic deconstruction of something. I'd rather people go in and say, this is just really funny, you know? And I think we want to just have, we love the genre of romantic comedy, and this is our version of making one and making fun of it at the same time. And it's our tribute to that genre, as well as saying, like, aren't these formulas funny because they're so entrenched?
You know? I just found myself thinking of it the same way that I thought of seeing Blazing Saddles the first time, which there's definitely a love of that genre, the way those things were staged.
Oh, yeah.
But right down to the way the song is used in the movie.
Well, I think that, exactly, yeah. And I mean, certainly Blazing Saddles specifically and Mel Brooks are huge influences on this project in particular, and Airplane, you know, those sort of older generation of spoof movies, which truly, you could tell that these directors loved the genres that they were talking about. And I think, you know, it's less like the more recent spate of the scary movie type template, which isn't exactly what we were going for.
Well, but we can go back to the state, and I even think this is a kind of a UCB thing almost, that there has to be reality at the center of these things. I mean, it may get kind of spoofy and surreal along the edges, but you go back to Blazing Saddles, Gene Wilder is as real as he could possibly be.
And it's in the execution and performances, for sure. And that's a huge element that we learned in the state and into Wet Hot and American Summer all the way through, is, and also getting actors who know how to do that and know how to ride that. And one of the reasons I think Paul Rudd is so unique, but everyone we work with does this, is they can play so committed and so sincere and so with so much depth these situations and these characters, while still also being aware of where the joke is somewhere in there and knowing how to deliver what is ultimately designed to be laughed at.
It's a treatment. We're sitting in a cafeteria where people from Children's Possible are poking their heads in, which David's directing. And I think about that even here. I mean, the way this show plays is that it's shot as if it were an episode of ER or something.
Yeah.
There's a primetime gloss. So it's not just quotations. It's the real thing.
Right. And we really do make an effort to give it everything that we do, which we want it to have veracity and feel fully developed and in the real world, except for those specific places where we're consciously breaking the reality. And one of the traps we fell into making They Came Together was, and in some of the early cuts that we had, some audiences were confused because it has such of the veneer of a, quote, real romantic comedy. And Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler are two stars that would easily be in a real romantic comedy. So some audiences, it took them a while in our early cuts for them to even understand what we were doing, because we didn't have those dinner double date scenes that frame the story earlier on.
Oh, gosh.
And so we just sort of told the movie in a much more straightforward, linear way. This will make sense to anyone who's seen it. But
that's why you're here.
Exactly. But and so some audiences were just confused by it, or why is this dialogue so banal? And, you know, doesn't the story feel like old hat? And, you know, we've tried to figure out a way to say, no, that's the joke. And we conceived and shot the framing storytelling device much, much later in the process, you know, after a year of editing, basically, once we realized how important it was to tell the audience at the beginning, relax, this is just a funny movie that's a spoof, and you don't have to try to take it on the level of a, quote, real movie.
But there's one sequence that I so admired as a piece, I had to watch it again so I could laugh at it, when the two would, not to give too much away, but there's a sequence where they run into each other going to a Halloween party.
Yeah.
And that not only plays as like a real piece in the movie, and also a piece of quotation marks around it, but it could literally have been a scene from a...
Oh, yeah. Well, so many of the scenes actually could easily fit right into some of those.
But that's one of the few where initially you don't play the quotes out.
And it's exactly.
And it's a very long sequence. I mean, that's... I found myself impressed by the commitment to something that long. It's really... It's almost a kind of attention. How much longer can he get away with doing this on
right.
the scene?
Well, there's certain elements of it that are just to our taste. Me and Michael Showalter, who made this together, the subtlety of just doing it, just actually doing the thing without even revealing any huge twist on it yet, as you might, you know, or depending on where and when. But it does distinguish it from, I think, some other kinds of spoof movies where it's a lot more like, remember this, and now here's somebody dressed up like that character from that movie, and here's an exact recreation of that scene, but with poo-poo instead, you know. And we're trying to do it just kind of in our own way that makes us laugh.
Poo-poo, this is public radio, David. Don't get me in trouble.
I mean,
here.
Doo-doo.
Thank you, that's much better. But as you talk, those movies you're talking about, that sort of spate of movies have come since Scary Movie, and I've actually used the part of Airplane that's really kind of sketch, more sketch comedy oriented, where basically, yeah. It's like what I was saying about the comedy shows of the 90s that the state came as almost kind of a response to,
yeah.
Where they're so busy stating that they were comedy, it kind of relieved you of the necessity of laughing. You just kind of go, oh, that's funny.
Right, right. We're definitely in some ways, in the play it straight, and then therefore the absurdity of the situation takes over, or the absurdity of the premise. But also, I have to admit, when I look back at the state, you know, I'm 44, and we did that when I was 23, 24, 25. You know, it's a lot of young men screaming, too. It's a lot of energy that needed a place to go. But I mean, I do look back and I thought we definitely had something when we were doing that. And from day one, we always had this tireless effort to not overlook details.
But there's so much energy in that. And that's for me what connects it to Wet Hot American Summer, is that same kind of, this is our chance to do this, so we're going to do this. We may never get another chance again.
I think that, and I remember when I was at NYU, I saw the state group before it fully formed, and I saw a lot of those people that eventually were in the group, and just thought the show they were doing had this inclusive, funny quality to it that was so alluring to me as an audience member, where I just like, sometimes you feel like people are having fun, but they're not including the audience. This felt like they were having so much fun, and we were all invited to be part of it. And I feel like I try to do that on every set I have. I try to make sure that we are all having fun so that becomes infectious to the audience in the right way, you know.
We're going to give you a chance to take a breath. It's The Treatment. My guest, David Wayne, the co-writer and the director of They Came Together. More to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. It's a remote location show from the cafeteria of the Children's Hospital set. I'm with writer-director David Wayne, whose new project is the film They Came Together. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is that you are a relentless collaborator. I mean, you worked with Michael Showalter, going back to the state with whom you wrote the script. Michael Ian Black, you work with. Ken Marino, you wrote, who came in and did rewrites with you on Role Models, and who was...
We wrote Wanderlust together. And we did The Ten together.
Yeah.
And we also did a movie called Diggers together that he wrote and I produced.
I mean, that whole idea of the state, which the idea of 11 very aggressive guys with something to prove coming and kind of forming this thing that... That they held together for as long as it is were kind of remarkable to
me. Well, we came from a very specific place, which was during college, we had this comedy troupe, and it was 11 of us, and we had an idea that we should be a total democracy, and all for one and one for all, and everything by consensus. And it was a lot of fighting, and a lot of, let's just talk this out till 4 a.m. if we have to, but we're never going to allow a decision to happen unless all 11 can get behind it. And that kind of groupthink led all the way. We kept operating that way through doing our TV series on MTV. And so if the art director needed to know what color a pillow should be on a set, the 11 of us would talk it over and then give them an answer. And so coming from that background that was for us from age 18 to 27, we each have a very highly collaborative tendency. And so all of us in the group have gone on to do other things in the business, but we tend to keep gravitating towards each other and to keep working together in different configurations and collaborations. And it's so much fun. It's so much fun to work with your friends, and you have a shorthand. It's like being in jazz band. When I'm working, you know, on set right now with Ken Marino, who I've worked with since 1988. And
you told me you guys are college roommates.
We were college roommates. Yeah. And, I knew all these guys since I'm a teenager, and the fact that we have that history together informs everything we do, and it makes it just a real blast.
And by the way, it's The Treatment. My guest is David Wayne, whose new film is They Came Together.
And my interviewer is Elvis Mitchell.
Nobody cares. But trust me, nobody listens to the show to hear me. Okay. I can tell you that from hard-won experience. talk a little bit specifically about what They Came Together is about.
They Came Together is sort of a rom-com, but it's sort of an homage slash deconstruction slash spoof of the romantic comedy genre. It stars Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, as well as Kobe Smulders and Michael Ian Black and Ed Helms and Christopher Maloney and a long list of really great, funny actors and actresses. And it basically follows a very standard issue by design, almost ridiculously simplistic romantic comedy story in New York City.
And right down to the statement of New York being a character in the movie.
Yeah, in fact, I find that when people say that in interviews, that you know, New York is like another character in the movie, is such a weird, banal statement. And so we took to not only saying it within the dialogue of the movie, but it's also listed in the credits as that. It's on every poster, every piece of marketing, every interview I've done. It says New York is like another character in the movie, just so we can just hammer it home as much as we can. But yeah, it takes place on this fetishized, idealized Upper West Side of Manhattan, you know, kind of taking a twist on the Nora Ephron, Nancy Meyers world. And, you know, it's just, and it's a lot of like, oh, this could only happen in New York, even though it's nothing. But, and then it just goes through all of the expected signposts of the rom-com story, and the boy meets girl, and they have a problem, and they get back together, and there's a wedding at the end, no spoiler alert. And just having fun along the way with just silliness from beginning to end.
I guess as we're talking about this, one of the things I think about that, and I wonder if this is specific to you, so many of the things you've done, there's been a character who just kind of relentlessly pushes through, and it can be Paul Rudd for good or bad. I mean, in Role Models, again, he just keeps at that same thing that he does, even though it's going to like basically crash his plane right into the side of a cliff. In this movie, he's oblivious in the same way, but he's relentlessly pushing through. I think about the character in Wayne Days, your guy who just...
There's an innocence to the point of insanity, I think, in maybe a lot of the characters. Yeah, just a wide-eyed innocence.
Yeah, I think we're almost like, we're going back to theater, it's almost in this weird way of modern Candide who doesn't see the open manhole in front of him.
Right. Well, and I do think that is a trope of modern rom-coms too, is just this idea that the complexities and the pitfalls of real relating between men and women is just not part of it.
Yeah, and I just like that idea because that feels to me like a particularly American kind of optimism, although it comes again, if we go back to Candide, but it's a theatrical kind of optimism. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think audiences connect to it. And that I find myself wondering if there's a way for you to create somebody who's kind of an audience surrogate, but also his own person.
This is all very interesting. I don't know.
Because I like that idea of somebody who's just the person who's following the balloon and is going to walk off the side of a cliff.
Right.
And that...
I mean, I think it's always appealing in any story, someone who has singular determination. I think of the bicycle thief, or, you know, I think it's always appealing to someone who's just got, or similarly in Kill Bill, you know, it's just that idea that someone has a passion or a direction. Cause I think most people's real lives are far more complicated and, you know, you're always questioning where you're going or what you want or what you're doing. And that's why most screen characters are like, you know, I'm going to be this, and, you know, state the goal, and then they never stop.
But what you're talking about, that even appends to the Blues Brothers, were on a mission from God. You're talking about the Bicycle Thieves or Kill Bill, those people on missions. In your work, there's often not a mission. There's just this sort of adherence to a way of life, a commitment to a certain thing that they find themselves sticking to. And that kind of determination is a really interesting thing. It's almost like you're writing or constructing an exercise for a character to play.
Interesting. I think, well, so I do think there is, and this might be a bad thing, we sometimes tend to put premise in front of character, which I think gives the work a certain absurdity. And I know in Wet Hot American Summer, and in some ways in everything, we certainly do it a lot in children's, the characters are so malleable and so twisted in order to just serve the needs of the story moment. And I know that in Wet Hot American Summer, Andy, the character that Paul Rudd plays, for example, in the original versions was three or four different characters. And we just combine them all together for efficiency. And so he plays these really randomly different roles in different parts of the story. And I think that's not really the right way to do it, but it gives it a certain unique quality maybe.
But in each of those, and it is a funny thing about it is, it then taking me back for you, the influence of Tootsie, all these things that feel like they're kind of anecdotal, that don't really seem to connect, are there as connective tissue.
Yeah. That's true. And like we're saying about all these things, I'm very relentless about not putting things in that don't have a reason, you know, and don't serve the larger whole. And I remember going to the Robert McKee screenwriting course. And
you did that?
Oh, yeah.
Was it instructive for you?
Was it what?
Was it instructive
for you? Very much so. I mean, I think, in fact, I was just doing an interview with Michael Showalter last night, and who taught screenwriting for many years. And he was saying, and I agree, all of those books and theories about screenwriting are all helpful. They're all saying essentially the same thing, but in different ways, with different perspectives and different words. And it helps as either just a reminder or an expansion of understanding the language of this very weird art form. And for me, going to Robert McKee was, I mean, he himself was very charismatic and interesting to hear. And then his way of explaining how to deconstruct and therefore construct a screenplay was definitely helpful. And I go back to those lessons all the time. You know, the best part is on the third day, you watch Casablanca, and he stops every 10 seconds and explains what the story craft is and what's going on and why that serves that. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. It takes a whole day to watch Casablanca.
I've often felt that way about Casablanca. It's the treatment, my guess, is David Wayne. His new film as director and co-writer is They Came Together. But again, I mean, these juxtapositions that we're talking about, reality versus surreality, or that idea of these guys, and it's interesting to hear you talk about McKee and that kind of thing, where they're kind of constantly pushing ahead versus the randomness that often happens in the things you do too. I mean, these idea of not exactly finding balance, but throwing these conflicting elements into the air.
We spent on the state, I remember, days trying to figure out the ending to something we couldn't think of an ending for, and sometimes threw it away if we couldn't. It was just, particularly as a reaction to SNL, I think we were so determined to make sure sketches had endings, to the point where sometimes when I've watched back at some of them, I'm like, God, we really had to put a button on every single piece. But, you know, I think it does distinguish it, and it makes it, that's why I like, as a, to serve as a viewer, you know that you're in good hands when you know that there's going to be, like, you watch an episode of Children's Hospital, you know we're going to go off in some direction, whether it's truly surreal or in some way it's going to be some redefining of the premise, and then you know that it's going to be structured into something that lands in some way, whether it's absurd or otherwise. And I think that's what makes, for me as a viewer, the show fun to watch. If I open up an old episode, I know that it's going somewhere, even if I forgot what we did.
And it also, by doing that, you're demanding and you're creating attention for the audience, and it's that thing that clearly links from the state to They Came Together, that idea that this is going to go back to where it started. This isn't just a random, if it may feel random in the moment. And part of that thing
is, I think some people who see it don't get past what feels random, you know. And
is that the issue?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, some people have said, well, Wet Hot American Summer is a series of sketches and just strung together. And, you know, you can't, I'm a big believer in, if someone has a feeling about the movie, then they're right, because that's the, you know, that's their point of view. But I'm disappointed when I hear that, because I feel like it's so not that to me. It is episodic, but it ties together in such specific ways, in such, in my head, such clear structural ways.
Now, but back to the state, I guess, is there a state reunion imminent this fall?
Yeah, we're going to be doing the Festival Supreme, which is a big festival in L.A.
It's the Tenacious D thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some new material and probably some old material, and gathering all of us together somehow and make it happen. It's going
to
be great.
How will you guys all find time to do this now? Because everybody has something else he's working on.
Yeah, I mean, we are definitely 11 of the busiest people in the world. But the way to do it is somebody gives us an invitation for some date so far away that we all say yes, and then we have to freak out when it actually comes and we have to figure it out. But several years ago, we reunited just to do a night of new material up at San Francisco Sketch Fest, and we did a test run down here at UCB in LA. And, you know, we love it. It's like riding a bike again. It's working together as the whole group is a true thrill for us. So I still think there's going to be a state something in the future, maybe when some of us have more time.
Well, David, thank you so much for making the time on your lunch break to do this.
And thank you for coming all the way to the set of Children's Hospital to talk to me. It's a true thrill.
It's not, but that's sweet of you to say. My guest is David Wayne. His new film as director and co-writer is They Came Together. A recording engineer at the cafeteria of Children's Hospital, not the real Children's Hospital, but a TV show on Adult Swim, is Will Bentley. The show is mixed by Melissa Morton, is edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm never going to say a city is a character in a movie again.
Please.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.